In our study tonight, we're continuing to talk about Joseph. We read about Joseph and the dreams that he had in chapter 37 of the book of Genesis that indicated that one day his brothers would bow down before him, and of course that caused them to be all the more upset with him because of him being the favored son. And you, of course, are well acquainted with all of that. The three promises that God made to Abraham, what are they? And where are they found? Genesis 12, okay. When they're initially made to Abraham, they're repeated to Abraham in Genesis, pardon me? All right, the land promise in particular is defined in Genesis 15. The entirety of them, all three of them, are repeated to him after he offers Isaac or attempts to offer Isaac in Genesis 22. And then the promises are renewed to Isaac where? Genesis 26, and then to Jacob in Genesis 28. That's right. We come to Genesis chapter 37, and we begin to talk about Joseph and the sons of Jacob. The sons of Jacob, by the way, are listed for us, and I want you to have a kind of a handy place that you can go when you say, oh, I can't think of the names of those boys. Think of Genesis 35. Genesis 35, because in the last, next to the last paragraph of Genesis 35, we see them identified what boy was born to what mother, and that's a good place for you to go to remember that. Yes? That's tough to say, because we've got Reuben, he's the oldest one. And then we've got four in succession born by Leah. And then, let's see, it was Rachel's handmaid that had two, and then Leah's handmaid that had two. And then you have Rachel having Joseph. I don't have that right, I don't believe. As far as order, I would say in the neighborhood of some 20 years, because you've got Joseph at 17 being sold, that would make Reuben considerably older than he was. Just a rough guess, I'm going to say maybe in the neighborhood of 10 years older. And then you have Benjamin being the youngest one, so you've got a pretty wide spread. Scholars believe that Benjamin may have been in the neighborhood of 10. There's lots of disagreements, but in the neighborhood of 10 when Joseph was sold, so that gives you some idea in the neighborhood, I guess, of a, 20-year or so spread, just a guess.
Yeah, I just figured the idea that Reuben was a grown man by the time the youngest couple of them
were. I would think. He was certainly the firstborn, so yes, I would think so. Yeah. All I can do is give you a rough kind of guess on that. Randy? Yeah, all together. Yeah, had four, and then her handmaid had two, and then I believe she had two more. Yeah, but the latter two was after her handmaid had two. She had four right in a row. Yeah, yeah, that's the summary. That's the summary of the children she had. She had four right in a row, and then the handmaids had children, and then there were two more born of Leah. Yeah, yeah, go back a few chapters, you can find that. Okay. So as we talk about Joseph in Egypt, the brothers hate him, they sell him into to a caravan of traders, they go south into Egypt, and they sell him to Potiphar, as we know, and Potiphar worked him for quite a long time. There was a respect and honor that existed between Potiphar and Joseph. And Potiphar's wife took a liking to Joseph and wanted to commit fornication with him. And Joseph would not. And then she lied about what Joseph did, and Joseph wound up in prison. And in prison, God continued to bless him. And he became the director of the prison, as it were. And then eventually interpreted the dreams for the butler and the baker. And the baker was hanged, and the butler once again served the king. 2 years later, we know that the butler remembered Joseph, and Joseph was called to interpret Pharaoh's dreams, which indicated there were 7 years to come that were 7 years of plenty, followed by seven lean years, 7 years of famine. And Pharaoh appointed then Joseph to be the one to lay in store those things that were necessary for the period of the famine. We talked about the riches that that brought into Egypt. Everybody who wanted grain had to go to Egypt to buy it, including Joseph's brothers up in the land of Canaan. And we also noted in our last study that when Joseph's brothers came down the first trip into Egypt to buy grain, they brought money with them. Joseph made some inquiries about his father and about his brother to find out that these men, of course, had a brother. And he knew then when he saw them that they were his brothers. They did not recognize him. Much time had passed and changed a number of things. He has their money placed back in their sacks. On their way home, they discover that. And they're home for a while. They need to buy more grain. Where's Simeon during this time? He's in jail down in Egypt with instructions from Joseph. The brothers have instructions from Joseph. Don't come back unless you bring your youngest brother Benjamin. And so now they need to come again and buy grain. And they have some difficulties about whether or not to bring Benjamin. Jacob doesn't want Benjamin brought. He said, I've lost Joseph. I've now lost Simeon, and I'm afraid I'll lose Benjamin. Benjamin was special. Why? Rachel's son. That's right. She died giving birth to Benjamin. And then we note that they came back and they bring Benjamin, and they start back home with their grain in their sacks, and the servant of Joseph catches up with them, seeking to look into their sacks, and what does he find? Money. Money for the first trip, money for the second trip, and the silver drinking vessel. Where was it? Benjamin's cup. Benjamin's cup. Benjamin's sack. The drinking vessel was found. And when that occurred, everybody goes back to stand before Joseph. And who begins to plead? Take me, let Joseph go home. Judah. That's right. Judah does. And Joseph eventually reveals himself to his brothers, and that ought to bring us up to about chapter 45 in the book of Genesis. In Genesis chapter 45, Joseph explains to his brothers that you meant this to me for evil, but don't beat yourselves up too bad. Why? All right, it was God who brought me here to preserve life. And to preserve you alive. And you'll see that in chapter 45 and in verse 5, 6, 7, and 8. Chapter 45, verses 5, 6, 7, and 8. I want to get up here in these charts a little farther. We talked about all that just now. Okay, here we are. We note then that Joseph sends word back to his father and to the rest of the family to come down into Egypt. What was the reaction of Jacob? All right, didn't believe him. He thought he was dead. How long has it been? 22 years. He's made peace, evidently, with the idea that he's never going to see Joseph again. And now, hearing that Joseph is alive, he's reluctant to believe the truth. I want you to underscore that in your thinking. That is an excellent illustration, in my judgment, to help people to see that you may believe something to be true for a very long time, and that can put blinders on you. It can prevent you from seeing the truth when it is manifest before you. And so it was here with Jacob. It took some convincing for him to believe that Joseph, his son, was not dead. Now, in Genesis chapter 46, I want you to drop down in the text. Rather than drop down, let's just start at verse 1. Genesis chapter 46, verse 1. John, would you read something for me, please? Would you mind to read down through verse 4, please?
Israel
All right, look carefully, if you would, please, at verse 3. Where is this great nation to develop? In Egypt. Go back, if you will, to Genesis chapter 15. Genesis chapter 15. In Genesis chapter 15, Abraham, having been promised this particular land, and of course we see it defined from the river Euphrates to the river of Egypt in verse 18. But in the reading of this text, when Abraham arrives in the land, Juan, you mind to read a couple of verses for me, please? You? Uh-huh. Chapter 15. Genesis chapter 15. Would you read verses 13 and 14 and 15 for me, please? All right, Abraham, you're not going to live in this land in any respect other than a sojourner, a stranger, a pilgrim. But four generations from you, this land is going to be given to your descendants. Now, we've got a hiccup in this. At the time that God spoke to Abraham, how many children did he have? None. All right, now we've got things growing a little bit. We've got, seen that Abraham had Isaac. Isaac had two sons, Jacob and Esau. Jacob now has 12 sons, and as Jacob and those sons and their families, those that are left in Canaan, come down into Egypt, how many of them are there? 70. There are 70 people. You'll see that in verse 26, beginning of chapter 46 in the book of Genesis. No, it isn't. There's some speculation on just how many this represents. Now, I understand the question. I don't know the answer to it. All I know and what I use to illustrate the point is in verse 27, or verse 26 beginning, it says, all the souls that came with Jacob into Egypt that came out of his loins. Now, there's where you're seeing the descendants. Yeah, uh-huh. And then in verse... Yeah, you've got that involved. And the sons of Joseph, who were born unto him in Egypt, were two souls. All the souls of the house of Jacob that came into Egypt were 70. Now, there's some division in thinking whether that 70 represents the entirety, and perhaps including certain servants and so forth and so on, or not. I shake my head because you kind of do what you do with that. I don't know. It would likely be more, but not a lot more. No, it couldn't be a lot more. I don't know. But I use this number when I try to get folks to see what God had promised to Abraham. At the time that he promised, he didn't have any descendants. Now we know that there are at least 70. And then when they come up out of the land of Egypt, we want to see how the numbers escalate. Okay? That's a good question. Anything else? When you get that all hashed out, let me know. I just haven't seen the relevance of hammering the number to precision in the study. Yeah. 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 Oh, yeah. Yeah. I use this number because it's a number that I can point a finger at. Terry? Okay. And when we go from there, we go up to over 600,000 fighting men. And there again, you have to rely on some estimation to figure out how many people we're talking about in the entirety of these who have descended. Yeah. Don't know. Scholars suggest some 2 to 3 million. You know, when you guesstimate with a million variable, that's a pretty big variable, but that's still a lot of people. Okay? Still a lot of people. All right, we're looking at this little piece of land right here, the land of Goshen, where Joseph brought his family to settle. And what we learn is this is the choicest portion of the land. Look, if you would, at verse 34. Verse 34. Ye shall say, thy servants have been keepers of cattle from our youth, even until now, both we and our fathers, that ye may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. That verse itself presents some complexities in trying to answer it, because these men are shepherds, and the Egyptians didn't consider that a very good thing, but yet when they came down, it was the Egyptians that asked these men to watch their livestock and care for their livestock. So these men had some talent and ability that was recognized by the Egyptians. But the point of our focus is they are given the land of Goshen to live in, the choicest portion of the land. Now, as we turn the page just a little bit, we see that Jacob lived and prospered 17 years in the land of Egypt before he died in Genesis chapter 47. Drop down, if you will, to verse 28. Chapter 47, verse 28. It says, and Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the days of Jacob, the years of his life, were 147 years. The time drew near that Israel must die. And he called his son Joseph and said unto him, if now I have found favor in thy sight, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and deal kindly and truly with me. Bury me not, I pray thee, in Egypt. But when I sleep with my fathers, thou shalt carry me out of Egypt and bury me in the burying place, or in their burying place. Where was that, by the way, Richard? Cave at Machpelah, that's right, back up in the land of Canaan. Exactly. And so that's what was done. He was carried back up into the area of Bethlehem, where he was to be buried, where the fathers were buried. All right? Chapter 50. Joseph. Yes, David? So he wound up with some good time, I guess, at the beginning and the end. Yes. John, question? Okay. So Joseph chapter 50. Before I look at that, however, there's a passage in Genesis chapter 49 that we need to take a look at. Genesis chapter 49. In Genesis chapter 49, beginning at verse 1, it says that Jacob called unto his sons and said, gather yourselves together, that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the latter days. That's interesting to me, because in this next several verses of Genesis chapter 49, he addresses himself to these sons, Simeon and Levi and Reuben and so forth. But when you look at verse 10, you want to underscore that in your thinking, because verse 10 says, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the obedience of the peoples be. Why is that important? Yes. That's right. This is a prophecy that this lineage that God had spoken to Abraham about was to come through Judah. You remember, in thy seed shall all families of the earth be blessed. And that was going to come through the lineage of Judah. David? He is. Yes. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Carolyn, I didn't hear what you said. Okay. Okay. So we want to note this verse 10. And then, of course, down in verse 28 and following, Jacob was to be buried with Leah in the place of the father's sepulchers. Now, as you come to chapter 50, Joseph makes arrangements to take Jacob's body back to the land of Canaan, there that it might be buried, and then he returns back to Egypt. Now, just in the reading of the text of chapter 50, you may not observe just very clearly or quickly what has happened until you get over to the first chapter of the book of Exodus. But in the interim, what about Joseph's place, his authority and his rulership and so forth in Egypt? What's happening? Lynn? All right. Evidently not. If you look back at the text of the 50th chapter, in verse 19, one more time, he tells his brothers that what you did, you meant it to me for evil, but God meant it for good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. And Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's house. And Joseph lived 110 years. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children of the third generation. The children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, was born upon Joseph's knees. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I die, but God will surely visit you and bring you up out of this land unto the land which he sware unto Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones from thence. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. What I want you to see in this, basically two things. One is that Joseph has grown very old in Egypt. Number two, Joseph is very much aware of what God had promised to Abraham. Do you see that here? He knows that they're going to come out of this land. This is not theirs. Now, at this time, is the family of Joseph, are they slaves in Egypt? No, not yet. But Joseph knows they're going to come out. There's going to be a significant amount of time between now and then, but they're going to come out and go into the land, he said, which God promised unto Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Joseph's body is embalmed, and he's put in a coffin in Egypt. Now, question, because you know the answer, how long is it going to be between the time that Joseph's buried about so, you can give me a round number if you like, and about the time that he gets to finally be buried? Pardon me? 400 years? Well, let's think about that then. That's going to be a long time. We'll have to talk about that. Going to be a while before Joseph is buried. As you look at Exodus chapter 1, we've introduced that question. Now everybody's going to be looking up the answer. Yeah. Look at Exodus chapter 1. Not right now, Chris, right now. Exodus chapter 1, right now. In Exodus chapter 1, there the text begins to tell us, Carolyn, this gets back to the question that you asked regarding the descendants of Israel, verse 1, those who came with the household of Jacob, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Benjamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. And all the souls that came out of the loins of Jacob were 70 souls, and Joseph was in Egypt already. And Joseph died, and all his brethren, and all that generation. And the children of Israel were fruitful, and increased abundantly, and multiplied, and waxed exceeding mighty, and the land was filled with them. What's happening to the Israelites? Growing and growing and growing in number. In chapter 1, verse 15, we've got a problem. The king of Egypt spake to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of one was Sapphira. I didn't say that right. Richard, help me, please. Chapter 1, verse 15. Well, turn over there. Exodus 1, verse 15. Shiphrah. All right, I got one too many syllables in it. And the name of the other was Puah. And he said, when ye do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women, and see them upon the birth stool, if it be a son, then ye shall kill him. If it be a daughter, then she shall live. What's Pharaoh afraid of? We're going to take over Egypt. That's right. We've got so many of these folks that if we have an enemy, then all that it would take to swing the battle is for the Hebrews to side with them, and we're toast. We're history. So we need to slow down the growth of these Hebrews, and we'll do that by killing all the little boys. How did the Hebrew midwives respond? Yeah. All right, Pharaoh still has a problem. How does he seek to resolve it? Kill them anyway. That's right. In verse 22, Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, every son that is born ye shall cast into the river, and every daughter ye shall save alive. All right? So we're still going to kill all these little boys. And we note then that one of the daughters of Levi has a son, or a man rather, of the house of Levi, took to wife a daughter of Levi, it says in verse 1, and she has a son. And, of course, we know this son's name is Moses. And rather than to allow young Moses to be killed, what does she do? Julie? She hides him. That's right. And who's appointed to kind of take care of him, watch after him? His sister. And what's her name? Miriam. Exactly. And one day, Pharaoh's daughter comes down to the river to take a bath, and she sees this little baby in a basket. And there he is, just floating around. And what does she want to do with him? Take him home. And, of course, about that time, Miriam pops out and says, you're going to need somebody to nurse that child. I know somebody. And, of course, she gets Mom. That's right. So Moses' mom has the opportunity to raise him in the house of Pharaoh as Pharaoh's daughter, but she teaches him who he is. Now Moses, pardon me? She raises him as, officially, the son of Pharaoh. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, did I say the daughter of Pharaoh? Yeah. So she raises him, or rears him, I guess I should say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he's raised with all the pomp and circumstance that Egypt has to offer him. Yeah. Pardon me? It would make him Pharaoh's grandson. Yeah. Pharaoh's daughter's son. Pharaoh's daughter's son. Okay, any other questions? Yes, David? Yeah, yeah. Little basket to float in the reeds, as we might refer to them. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Preserved his life. Yeah. Peggy? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the American Standard Translation uses that expression, Ark of Bulrushes. So he had an opportunity to be preserved, and of course we know that that was the result of the faith of his mother and his dad, as the Hebrew writer tells us in Hebrews chapter 11. And then when Moses was the ripe old age of 40, he saw a Hebrew taskmaster beating one of the Hebrews. And what did he do? Killed him. What did I say? I meant Egyptian taskmaster. Yeah, yeah. There weren't Hebrew taskmasters. Egyptian taskmaster. I have a hard time saying that word. Slave master. Slave drivers. That's easier to say. Yes. All right. So, Pharaoh responded to that. Look, if you will, at verse 14. He said, who made thee? Or verse 15, I'm sorry. It says, now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Moses has done two things. One is, he's identified who he is. He's a Hebrew. He has objected to the treatment of the Hebrews by the Egyptians. That was a deliberate choice that Moses made. The Hebrew writer tells us in Hebrews chapter 11, in verse 24, that Moses chose to suffer ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin as for a season, counting the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. That tells us that Moses made a mature, deliberate choice to serve God and to identify himself with the Hebrew people. A problem exists when two Hebrews get into it with each other. And Moses steps in to settle that, and one of them says, who are you? Yeah, you're going to kill us like you killed that Egyptian. And so now Moses knows that folks know about what he did, and Pharaoh finds out about what he did. And so Moses flees to the wilderness of Midian. Now, this wilderness of Midian. Let me catch up here. Pardon me? The Ishmaelites. Yes, tell me. All right, that's true. That's true. All right, that's right. That's right. This represents that caravan of traders that was going down into Egypt. The Midianites, a branch off of the Ishmaelites. All right. I want you to look. I'm getting ahead of myself. I missed this map I wanted to show you. The travels of Joseph. Back up with me just a little bit. Joseph was in Hebron when the episodes in his life become so dramatic, and he's sent to Shechem to check on his brothers, and they're not there, and he goes up to Dothan where they are, and it's there that he's so badly mistreated and sold then down into Egypt. And in a previous discussion of this, we said that the approximate distance from where Joseph is to Egypt is about what? Neighborhood of 200 miles. That's right. About 200 miles. And this is, of course, David, the point you're making where the Ishmaelite, Midianite merchants took Joseph, where then he became a servant in Potiphar's house. This is a little bit more expanded map to show you the distance from Hebron down into this portion of Egypt. Now, I want you to watch carefully. When Jacob is in Hebron, 22 years later, when he finds out that Joseph is alive, he makes this trip. Now, I've tried to draw a line, but my line is straight. And, Richard, I need to learn, you and Juan, maybe somebody else can teach me how to do this. I don't know how to make a line anything but a straight line. But this is the way of Shur. And it's very much likely that Joseph and these travelers or this caravan of traders traveled on the way of Shur instead of in a straight line. But when Jacob is sent for, he stopped here and offers sacrifices unto God on his way now down to the land of Goshen down in Egypt. But this is where Joseph is. And you see, he's really not all that far, relatively speaking, from home. If you had a son that was 200 miles away, you wouldn't hesitate to go see about him. If you knew he was that close, surely. But Joseph was 200 miles away, and his daddy thought he was dead. So he didn't travel this distance to go and to see about him. But then we find that, of course, Joseph brings the body of his father back to Hebron to be buried in the cave of Machpelah. And then he comes back to Egypt, where he remains for a period of time till he dies at a ripe old age. Okay? That illustrates for us then the travels of Joseph in Egypt. Later, of course, he's taken back for his burial. Now that said what I wanted to say about that. Any comments or questions? Ishmaelites. I understand that within the Ishmaelites you have branches or descendants. And they were a smaller, I guess, tribe of the Ishmaelites were known as the Midianites. So you've got a kind of a smaller fork in the tree. Okay? I do have a map on the wilderness of Midian, but you'll have to wait because I don't know exactly where it is. Let me see if I can find it for you. Okay? Yes. Yeah. So you've got the Ishmaelites that was the descendants of Abraham and Hagar, and then the Midianites, the descendants of Abraham and Keturah. Thank you. I meant to bring that up, Jenny. I appreciate you doing that, but I wanted to have that on the screen up here. I don't. Let's see. The wilderness of Midian. Not seeing it labeled. There we go. Okay, got you right there. Can you see it there, Randy? Yeah. Midianites. Okay. This map should be in your book, yes. I'm not sure exactly what page it's on. 66? 56? Okay. I'm sorry? The Gulf of Aqaba? Let me... Yeah. Yeah, right here's the Gulf of Aqaba. This little portion of the Red Sea. Yes. Yes. Any other questions or comments? Those are also helpful. Thank you. Pardon me? Yeah, the King's Highway probably doesn't get the travel that the Way of Shur or the Way of the Sea would get because it might be more difficult. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're talking about Moses? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yes. That's right. That's right. Now, good point. How long was he over here in this area? 40 years before he goes back to get them. Do you think you would become somewhat acquainted with the place in 40 years? And what did he do while he was there? He was a shepherd for Jethro. That's right, for Jethro, his father-in-law. Yeah, yeah. So he obviously became fairly well acquainted with this area that he was going to be leading these people in for quite a period of time. A lot of time outdoors. That's right. And of course, we'll talk more about that last 40 years as we get a little bit further along. I ask you to have your review of the book of Genesis completed and ready to go tonight. Everybody have that out and ready? That should be on page number 51 of your lesson book. Page number 51. We've done this before, so this ought not be all that challenging to you to try to get some of these events in chronological order. Everybody have that done? Find that to be fairly easy? Easier, maybe, this time than it was the last time? Okay, well, let's look at them. In the list, what comes first? Number one, creation. You guys are so good. Number two, the first sin. Number three, Cain killed his brother. That's right. Number four, the days of the flood. That's right. Number five, Tower of Babel. Number six, Call of Abraham. What chapter? Chapter 12. That's right. All right. Number seven, promises made to Abraham. What chapter? Chapter 12. Can't beat anybody tonight. Number 8. Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed. What chapter? 19. Very good. And then Isaac was born. Chapter 21. And then, of course, Jacob deceives Isaac to receive the inheritance or the birthright, as it were. And then finally number 11 is Joseph sold by his brothers. And that's chapter 37. I want you to remember that because that gives you a breaking point in the book of Genesis where the rest of the book is discussing the situation with Joseph. All right. Answer briefly. Second section, what did God give Adam to meet each of his following needs? He needed a home. What did He give him? Garden of Eden. That's right. He needed a companion. What did He give him? Gave him Eve. That's right. Gave him a wife. And then in order to have food, what did He give him? Pardon me? All right, the trees and plants, as we were talking about. I think that's how we need to answer that. Chapter 1, verse 30. And then in chapter 2, verse 16, we see that he could eat of all of them but one. And then regarding clothing, what did he give him? The skin of an animal. Okay, he made coats of skins. Now, I want us to underscore in our thinking there that the word naked does not necessarily always mean without any attire at all. For Adam and Eve had made for themselves what? Aprons of fig leaves. And God said, "You're naked. Who told you you were naked?" And He made for them coats of skins to cover their nakedness, the text tells us. All right? Further answers, what did God Adam to meet each of his following needs? When did Adam and Eve feel the need for clothes? After they sinned. All right, they ate of the tree of which God had said, "Thou shalt not eat." And then what did God give Adam to meet each of his following needs as it pertained to law? Man needs law, doesn't he? What did God give man? A law. All right, what was it? All right, you can't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. One law, don't miss that. You would think that man could have kept one law, but he didn't. He ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then what were the results when Adam and Eve broke their law. Death. That's right. They knew sin. There was pain in childbearing. Adam was cursed with working the ground in spite of the elements. That doesn't mean he didn't have anything to do prior to sin. He had to work. He was instructed to dress and keep the garden back over in chapter 2. You'll notice that where? About verse 15, 16. But then when he broke God's law, now we've got thorns and thistles and bad things. And also, of course, as a result of the sin that Adam and Eve committed, there was death. Now we need to talk about that. Yes, Lynn? All right. When I draw my circles, I draw a big circle and I put God and man inside that circle. And I also write between God and man, law. Law was given for the purpose of seeing what man would choose. As long as man chose to obey the law, there was perfect unity and harmony between man and God. But then when man decided to break God's law, what did it do to that perfect fellowship? What did God say would be the consequence of sin? Separation. In the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. Now, the death that God identified to Adam was what? Spiritual death. He was separated from God the very day that he ate it. This was the consequence of his sin. But also what began to happen? He began to physically die. Okay? I've got 2 minutes. He began to physically die. Why? Couldn't eat of the tree of life anymore. That's right. He's separated from that. And so he's cast out of the Garden of Eden. And now physical death ensues. Now, question. When we talk about the rest of the Bible, when we identify Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15 as the first of the redemptive promises, man has need of something that he did not need before. He needs this perfect fellowship with God that's been ruptured because of sin. How can that be restored? Through forgiveness, and that necessitated the blood of Christ.
Clearly, spiritual death results from sin. And you're saying that physical death itself was also part of the curse as a result of sin?
Yes.
If I'm reading you correctly, are you stating that if we know definitively that had they not sinned, that they would have not had any physical degradation? In other words, they would have lived physically forever, not aged?
I'm not stating that, Joey, and I'll tell you why. Because that's too much on the edge of speculation to satisfy me. I like to stay with what I know to be so. And we know that God said, we're going to cast him out of the garden lest he eat of the tree of life and live forever. That I know. To speculate on, well, what would have happened had he not sinned? Well,
based upon the passage you just quoted, yeah. It sounds like that they would have not experienced aging and physical death had they not sinned.
Yeah. The only problem I have with that, Joy, is it sounds like that. I don't want to say what if.
And I'm not saying it independently myself.
Yeah. That's where I am. I don't want to go there because I don't. All I can deal with is what is. And we know that he sinned and we know the consequences of it. That's true. That's right. Oh yeah, that's right. Okay, we've talked about that before. I have with others, and that's where I like to remain on that, because it presupposes some things that I don't know. I just don't know. All right, next time, be sure you have your questions all answered. Be reading into the book of Exodus. Be prepared to talk more about Moses, the plague, the Passover. We'll talk some about that next time.